Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me here today. For this week's episode, we are welcoming back onto the podcast Stephen Kirby from The Unchurch. You might remember him from a few months ago when I had him on talking about The Unchurch and his facilitation of BUFO and 5-MeO. And he's rejoining me here on the podcast again this week to talk about an upcoming online course that he is teaching that is called Trauma-Informed Entheogenic Guide Certification. He's going to be telling us all about that and how you can sign up and participate in the course if you are so interested. But before we get to the conversation, let's go ahead and do a few announcements as always. This week, thanks goes out to James and David, both of whom made contributions in support of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast via PayPal. If you would like to make a one-time donation or even set up a small monthly donation such as James has done with PayPal, it's quite easy. Stop by my personal webpage at martinbald.net, use the PayPal link at the top right of the page, and of course, there is also the link over to my Patreon page just below the PayPal link, and that is patreon.com/martinwball. There is everything from $1 a month all the way up to $100 a month, and a lot of stuff in between. And just a reminder, at the $20 a month and up level, you get access to all the archived episodes of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast that are exclusively available over at my Patreon page for my $20 and up a month supporters and patrons. And of course, my extended and ongoing thanks to everyone who supports me over at Patreon. And also to remind you, there's no obligation. You can join for as long as you like. You can quit anytime you like. So you can give support for a couple months. And then if your situation changes, there's no issue. You just cancel your subscription and you're out. So thanks everybody who has ever been over there, people who are currently over there, and people who will be there in the future. Don't really have a lot of other announcements to make right now, but I do just want to give a little bit of a teaser for next week here on the Entheogenic Evolution. Rather than getting into the next chapter of the Facilitating 5-MeO DMT Anthology, I'm actually going to push that back a little bit because there's been something that has really been weighing on my mind a lot recently. And by a lot, I really mean a lot. And I've been working on an essay, just getting all of those thoughts out. And I'm going to be sharing that essay here on the podcast. It's very personal, as I sometimes get here on the podcast. I don't want to reveal more about it right now, but it's just something that's been going on for a while now. And it's really under my skin. And so I'm going to be putting out this podcast episode and hope that you will listen to it. I hope that you will share it. I hope that you will digest it and contemplate it, and especially share it with other people that you think it might be useful for them to hear. But that's all that I'm going to say about it for now. You will hear more next week here on the Entheogenic Evolution. So back into the conversation with Stephen Kirby. Just a reminder, you can find him and his work and his church online at the website address of The Unchurch Church. So you have to write church twice, theunchurchchurch.com. And there you can find links to the Trauma-Informed Entheogenic Guide Certification Program that he is running with his wife. And also he has provided me with an affiliate link for people to sign up for the program. And I will be including that in the details to the podcast episode, so you can find the link in the description. Okay, so let's go ahead and kick it off and welcome Stephen Kirby back onto the podcast. All right, well, I'm welcoming back to the Entheogenic Evolution podcast today, Stephen Kirby. Stephen has previously been featured here in the podcast as the Wounded Healer and the Unchurch. And so we're going to be talking about some coursework that you're offering today. But to start us off, Stephen, first, how about here's my plan. This is the plan that I told you about that I wasn't going to tell you about till I told you about it. So now I'm telling you about it. So the plan is, let's remind the audience of who you are. So just kind of reintroduce yourself or anybody who hasn't heard the previous podcast that we did together or hasn't heard the podcast that you and I have done together on your own show. Then let's do a little check-in. Let's see what you've been up to in the time since you've been on the podcast, because it's been a number of months now. Time flies so quickly. And then we'll get into the courses and talk about all of that. So let's start with the reintroduction. Who is Stephen Kirby? Where in the world is he? Who's this Midwestern dude?
Well, thanks for having me on again, and I love the mystery of what's to be on this podcast, so I'll take it. Again, as you mentioned, my name's Stephen Kirby. Most people just refer to me as Kirby. It's easy, it's simple. I'm the founder of the Unchurched Church, which is one of the first, as my understanding, all-encompassing legal DMP churches in the country. As you mentioned, we're here out of the Midwest, Iowa specifically, but we've had the opportunity to start setting up branches in Colorado, Louisiana, and some other spots as we continue to try to grow this network of essentially trauma-informed facilitators, especially in the area of DMTs. Again, that would be the 5-MeO DMT, BUFO, a lot of folks would know it as, or N-dimethyltryptamine. Silomethoxin now is entering this realm, which is always a fun conversation about the mystery of that. Is it? And a few other things. So I've been facilitating medicine for some time now. I also run a coaching and mentorship program and some other things that probably aren't that relevant. But yeah, that's who I am, or all the roles that I get to play.
Yeah. So let me follow up and ask you about, you said that the Unchurched is now branching out. I'm really curious just to ask you a little bit about how that works. As you know, that this is kind of my new area of investigation, is I want to look at the rise and development of new entheogenic churches in the United States. So how is this process working for you? And like, who's getting involved? What are they doing? And also, I do want to talk a little bit just about the Midwest too, so we'll return to that, okay? But yeah, let's talk about the church expansion.
Yeah, essentially it's just been happening organically. But it was one of the hopes that I had when I started doing this is, again, I'm just one person. And again, you could look at me, it could be a face that maybe you don't want facilitating, maybe it's a face you feel comfortable with. So the objective is to bring in some diversity into this space, especially here in the Midwest. Where we could be lacking in some areas in that. So it just happened organically as we would facilitate ceremonies or have church services, whatever is the right term for you. Folks would say, well, how do I get involved? And it organically would be, well, do you know some folks in your area that would like to be served? Or they'd say, hey, I've got a family or friends. And then we would start heading to that neck of the woods. Again, Louisiana is one of the ones that I'm most excited about. And we will go down there and do some, maybe some private ceremonies. And that slowly but surely evolved into a large enough community where we're thinking, let's set a base here. And then again, it's just an expansion on the already created paperwork through the attorneys, which they'd be able to speak more about than I can. But to make it more specific to that state. And now you have a branch, and that's been happening. Again, Louisiana has been beautiful for us as we move that direction. Colorado was a very easy expansion. And now looking at Tennessee and some other spots as we continue to grow.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting. And I know that you can't answer the specifics about the legal paperwork and all that, but it sounds like from what you just said that having already done the paperwork, filled out the forms, done all of that, that now that can, in a sense, be edited and transferable into other locations. So once the church is established, that allows for other people to say, hey, I want to be a part of this church and open up a local branch and then just make the necessary modifications.
Correct. And again, you probably, as you mentioned, would know a little bit more about this than me, but my understanding is the Freedom of Religion Restoration, that's a federal, that's federal. Yeah. So the state is almost irrelevant. There's just some state-specific forms. My understanding, again, as far as setting up the nonprofit in the state and some of these other areas that would be more state-specific, but I think you nailed it perfectly. It's once the overall church has been established, it's significantly easier just to do some additional paperwork to make it more state-specific.
Wow. Well, that's great, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more about it. Still hoping you will be a contributor for the Psychedelic Sacraments book anthology that I just think it's such a fascinating cultural development that is just happening right now. And actually, I just had a couple other emails from some people saying, hey, I heard you were working on this book. I've got a church that I just started. And so I'm really looking forward to see how people are, you know, creating these churches. And I think a lot of them kind of have a similar ethos that you take of this idea of the unchurched, that this is not a dogmatic doctrinal church, but it is something that is allowing for certain forms of experiences that people would, you know, broadly categorize as sacred or some form of spiritual communion.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was on a public broadcasting show a little while back, and the co-participant was the whole topic was church and the issue with an organized religion, in the sense that if you no longer had the same belief structure, or you started shifting away from that core belief structure, that you essentially lost this community, which is important in so many aspects of the country and for so many people. So the co-host, their whole slant was, we're the anti of that. We're, the non-believing group. And to me, the thought was, well, all you did is create another pigeonhole that if somebody doesn't, so what if they start believing? Are they no longer in your group now? So it's just, to me, the whole thought of this unchurch concept is, especially if you've had an experience, 5-MeO, or just this deep experience of oneness with everything. It just melts the walls of the specific religions. For me, it did, and said, you could accept all of this. This all makes sense. I mean, to be a Christian and think that if you were born in Iraq that you wouldn't be a Muslim seems kind of silly to me, right? So to think that everybody there is going to hell but you're not, that didn't sit well with me for many years after the experience. But I don't think that any religion has it dialed in perfectly, but to us, it's like, bring your religion, bring your faith, bring your dogma. It's okay with us. It's all encompassing. So the unchurched seemed like a fair name.
And it's so interesting, sociologically speaking. I keep up on articles whenever I see these kinds of things talking about identification with traditional religions and participation in traditional religions. And those numbers, every year when they put out surveys, those numbers just continue to plummet. They're going further and further and further down, even to the point where most of Europe is now considered to be post-Christian. That it's not even a majority identity within the European countries anymore, and the United States is quickly following suit. I mean, we still have a much stronger overall Christian identity, but the numbers are dwindling, and people who are attending traditional church, they tend to be much older. Young people are not interested at all. I mean, there's like zero participation. Yet these entheogenic churches are stepping in. And this is where interest is now growing. It's probably one of the few demographics in the United States where we could say, quote unquote, religious participation is actually growing exponentially because of the interest, not in doctrine, not in getting preached at, but having access to experiences in which we can explore ourselves and our own sense of what the sacred is.
Yeah, I think, again, just through these experiences, and again, I could just speak for myself, but again, I've got thousands of folks that I've had the opportunity to be in the space with that share very similar experiences. But again, this understanding that we are one, we are all, it's all everything, and that just transcends any specific religion. But that is our religion, so to speak, is non-religion, right? Because it is this connection with God, source, consciousness, whatever words feel right for you, that is what's happening in these ceremonies. That is what's happening in this space. And to me, that is the closest form of connection to God. Again, if that word feels right for you. So it feels like the real church, right? Although we call it the unchurch, to me, it feels like the only version of church that would really make sense of this true connection with God. And again, it has a lot of other factors to it, in the sense that, again, I love the concept of the wounded healer again, where it's not, there is no pulpit, there's no one talking down to the congregation, like, let me educate you. It's like, as you know, you've been in the space, you facilitated, it's stepping out of that and allowing folks to find their own connection, so to speak, without me telling them what it should be like, or what they should do, or how they should do it. So again, it's kind of shifted the power from, again, somebody on a pulpit speaking down to folks, that to we are all together, we are all one. Let's journey this together. And I think that's very healing for people, especially folks that are stepping in with some level of religious trauma, which I didn't really understand until I went through the experience again myself. And again, I could see this loss of community, or loss of identity, and all these other things associated with the organized religion.
Yeah, well, there's a few things in there I'd like to talk a little bit more about, and getting into this idea of the loss of community, because that's one of the places where traditional churches have kind of held out and are able to hold on, is that, and even social scientific studies that are done, look at not necessarily is this religion true? Is it false? Is it good or is it bad? But looking at what are the social benefits that religious organizations provide? And the biggest one by far is the sense of community and a sense of belonging. And, you know, studies have shown that people who quote unquote belong to a church, they tend to live longer with fewer health issues as they age. And they attribute that to the sociological factor that you are not isolated. And then when we look at American society and really cultures around the world right now, again, social scientists and psychologists are saying there is an epidemic of loneliness. There's an epidemic of isolation. There's an epidemic of disconnection, which then ties into really the toxic behavior that we see people participating in online, where people engage with people from this remove of the internet, where they're not actually interacting with people, they're interacting with caricatures that they've created of people online. And we all know that social media engagement that is negative or has an emotionally negative response to it, that's what gets shared most often. And I was even reading an article the other day that said, everybody is a moral grandstander now. And it says that it doesn't matter what you post on social media, eventually the comments section will reach into, I'm better than you because you have, you know, like it's talking about, well, somebody like posts a picture of ice cream and they say, well, don't you know that kids in Africa don't have access to ice cream? You know, that eventually all online communication kind of devolves into this, you know, righteous one-upmanship. And that's all part of the lack of community, that people aren't actually interacting with each other. So the Midwest, now this is a place where, you know, those of us coastal types, which I've been my entire life. I've lived on the West Coast my whole life, except for a short stint in New Mexico. Psychedelics and psychedelic culture has been a big part of communities for a long, long time. But the Midwest, not so much. So just tell me a little bit about the building of that community and how community functions there. And like, for example, I was doing a consultation with a physician the other day, and she lives in the Midwest, and she's was talking about how she had never would have thought of psychedelics. And then finally someone said, well, hey, you know, maybe you should try this 5-MeO. And she tried it, and she immediately wanted to talk to me and saying, where do I find more people who are doing this? Because I'm in the Midwest, and like, there's no one around here that I know of. So just share a little bit about that, the building of community, and also how it's facilitated online and hopefully encouraging pleasant interactions between people online. I know it's a major issue on things like Facebook and things like that.
Yeah, I think, and kind of blended with what you were just discussing, I think this community aspect is again, as somebody that's a little bit of a loner and a little bit of a hideout, you know, community, I didn't realize the importance of community, not just to myself, for other people. If you would have asked me 8 years ago, I remember very distinctly telling my wife, I'm like, I just don't like humans at all. And it's because of these interactions, the social media, and again, the things that are displayed. But, you know, to church and community, again, just kind of following up on that piece, it's sure, when I went to church, and I want to make sure anybody that goes to church that is listening to this, this is not a knock. I have the utmost respect for whatever religion, whatever church you go to, whatever works for you. I have the utmost respect for it. So continue to do that. It's no objective to shift people away from that. But I also want folks to know that there's an alternative, because I think people stay in some of these systems because they don't know that there is an alternative. But the alternative to me is actually showing up to a real community event, a real church service, so to speak, where you're seeing authentic humans. And I always say, when I went to church, it was like, hey, Jim, how are you? Great, great, great. Everybody's great. Everything's on their best behavior. You show up to one of our ceremonies, like, hey, I'm Jim. I'm a train wreck. Well, me too. Great. Okay, we're all train wrecks here. That's okay. Let's. So you see authentic humans. And one of the negatives, I think, of doing this work and being in this space, it's made it very difficult to actually want to interact with people outside of this authentic community because of all the things that you talked about. When you meet people, the first thing they want to do is give you the resume of all the roles they are. Hi, I'm so-and-so. Here's what I do. Here's what I've got. Here's all the stuff. Do you see me for all these things?
Yeah.
And it can get tiring sometimes. And our goal is to obviously meet people where they're at, but to me, to have an authentic community. So how did we build a community in the Midwest? It wasn't my intent. As I was training to facilitate medicine, I just remember the facilitator was from a very warm climate. And I'm like, you need to come to Iowa. Let's like start doing this in Iowa. And they were like, not a chance. Am I coming to that climate? And then ultimately they said, this is you. I had a vision that you should be the one facilitating in that space. And again, that was years ago, and I wasn't as interested in that idea, but it's interesting how it did move in that direction because there was nobody here really facilitating and trying to create this community. And it just happens organically. Again, as I mentioned, once you have these authentic connections with people, you're just addicted almost to that authentic connection. So as more and more people started stepping into the space, you start slowly but surely building this community. And we've built it up to several hundred people, probably 400 people minimum locally that are part of this community from almost every walk of life. You would most of the people don't even know that all the people that are all the people. So it's become this very interesting network. But we have community events, we have barbecues and fire pits, and to have a community of people that show up from, again, all walks of life, all over the world, different religious backgrounds, but to be able to come, and again, not to pick on folks that drink, but most of these events, nobody's ever had any alcohol. It's just completely clean human beings that are having a pure, authentic interaction. Once you get into that space, it's tough to want to be in other spaces. But yeah, it's been interesting. The beauty of the Midwest here, though, it's a small community sometimes. So as I'm interacting with folks that maybe are interested in the medicine, the referral is somebody that I know that I know that has been referred through somebody that I know. So it's a pretty tight-knit community in that sense. And I think that's been one of the powers is it's especially in this area, it's a small enough geographic space that within 50 minutes of here, we've got an entire community of people. And some of them still underground, which is understandable, but a pretty large community of people that are continuing to build.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to get into talking about the teachings and the courses, but I think maybe let's start by looking at public speaking. That I know that this was not something that you were necessarily looking to get into, but it kind of happened that you started doing some public speakings. And this is something that has occurred in the time since you were originally on the podcast, whatever, however many months ago that was. So maybe tell us a little bit about that. What are the opportunities you've had so far, and how have you felt about that?
Thank you. The Science of Psychedelics Conference in Arizona was my first big gig, so to speak, outside of some of the podcasts that I've had an opportunity to do. And honestly, I thought of you a lot during that. I even think I tried to get a hold of you prior to that to help me try to create some content. And I spent weeks creating, it's just, I guess, a funny story. I just created weeks of creating all this content and then trying to memorize it. And just being overwhelmed and just overly anxious about it. And I literally did that all the way up to about 2 hours before I presented. And I'm like, what? You're not going to remember all this. You've been talking about this topic for like a decade now. There's very few people that know more information about how to facilitate this medicine than you. What are you trying to take notes on? So I just rewrote it in question form. So if somebody had asked me, who are you? What is 5-MeO-DMT? What are these things? So I just wrote bullet points of questions to myself. And amazingly, it went as smooth as it could have gone for me. And it helped me get over a lot of speaking anxiety. I'm not a public speaker by nature, but I love the topic. I'm fascinated with the topic. It's an important topic. For a lot of reasons that we'll get into, why the class, why these branches, again, as 5-MeO-DMT specifically becomes more and more popular, more and more well known through the different podcasts and some of the superstars that are now talking about it. To me, it is a unique medicine. It's a unique sacrament in the sense it just brings some different things that people should be cautious about. It has a deeper understanding. It's not taking 3 grams of psilocybin. It is a completely different experience than most psychonauts or your layman would understand. So to me, that just meant that we needed some additional safety protocols, more conversations about it, more understanding about it. So I found that talking about it would be important. And I had that opportunity. I've got a couple more coming up, hopefully, on some of these other conferences. I got somebody trying to help me land a few of these other opportunities so I can build the reputation that somebody like you has already of talking about this topic. I'm not as good as an author as you are by any stretch. So, and to be honest, you're probably one of the most articulate people about this topic that I've ever come across. And so it's been beneficial for me to begin to continue to read your material and listen to your podcast and absorb some of that information and try to regurgitate it in my own form. So I'm a budding public speaker. I'm excited about it, but it's still new territory for me that brings a little anxiety, to be honest.
Yeah. What was the crowd size like at that psychedelic science conference? How many people were you speaking in front of?
Oh, I know they aired it. I want to say in the auditorium itself, if I had to guess, probably 500-600 people, maybe. It was a lot, but as you know, it's had the lights on me. I was less concerned with how many people were in the space than I was of just breathing, trying to get through it. But interestingly, a funny story. The gentleman that went in front of me, completely different energy, high energy. You know, hoorah, hoorah, a bunch of videos with like his shirt off. And here's his PowerPoint of like, I'm an amazing human being. Look how amazing I am. And I'm sitting backstage with this other shaman and he looks at me, he goes, this feels strange. And I'm like, yeah. I was like, it's different. Let's just do your thing. But as he came off stage, you know, with all this energy, just high fives me, he goes, I got the crowd ready for you. And I'm thinking, well, we'll see how that plays out. And I just sat down, crossed my legs, waited for the room to get silent, and then went into the conversation like this, just a completely different energy. And the feedback that I got afterwards was it was probably the best part of the conference that a lot of folks found, and I'm sure that's varying on person to person. But I got so much positive feedback afterwards that it just gave me a huge confidence boost that this is something that you can do, that approach is right. It was emotional. It was empathetic. It felt right. So I'm still working out the kinks on it. But I enjoyed it, to be honest. Once I got over the fear of it, and again, the positive feedback never hurts. I think I want to do more of this.
Awesome. Well, that's great to hear, Stefan. I'm really happy that that went well for you and that you had that opportunity. That I'm always for more voices in the field, more people speaking about 5-MeO in particular. I think it's still largely very underrepresented at a lot of conferences and a lot of gatherings. And, I would love to see the day when there are more people talking about 5-MeO and God consciousness and unitary consciousness than there are people up there talking about spirits and machine elves and other stuff, just to rebalance the scales a bit.
Yeah, I was surprised, actually. I had a little booth, had 5-MeO DMT on it, the amount of people that had no idea what it was. And again, sometimes when you're in a space, you just assume everybody knows about the information that you have. I was absolutely amazed at how many folks have never heard of it. And I guess the last piece on that piece, it was in Sedona, in part of the Sonoran Desert. So part of my conversation was about shifting away from the use of the actual Sonoran Desert toad itself and moving to more of the pure molecule. So I was anticipating that was not going to go well. So that was part of my anxiety too of let's see how this goes. I believe it's the case. I believe it's true. I'm going to stand behind that. I'm probably in the wrong place to stand behind that, but come to find out, I actually was in the right place to stand behind that, and that was very well received, because I do think folks should be shifting away from the actual toad to the pure molecule for a million of reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm totally with you on that one. Great. Well, let's go ahead and let's shift now more into the idea of courses. And maybe let's start with some of your background, the training that you've received, where you are, I don't know if we should say certified or credentialed. You can fill in those blanks for us. And then how you're bringing that into the courses that you are now creating and looking to be teaching? And I think that these are mostly online courses, or again, you fill in the blanks for us. But let's start with the background that you're bringing.
Yeah, I've been a plant medicine facilitator for over a decade. I was trained in more of a traditional format where I was just a participant. After probably 60 or 70 journeys, the facilitators asked me if I'd be interested in volunteering and helping. And I went down that track for several years until essentially I was brought aboard in a full training capacity and then, given the red hat, so to speak. So that passed on. But during that was with ayahuasca. So I was trained in a little bit more of a traditional format. But I started shifting away from that after my next experience, which was 5-MeO-DMT. The 5-MeO-DMT experience, anybody that's had it would understand, it just changed everything. So a lot of the structure that I felt that I was doing in an ayahuasca ceremony shifted to being less ceremonial, so to speak, and more pragmatic, maybe is the words I'm looking for. But yes, once I shifted into 5-MeO-DMT, that told me, I'm like, this is, it didn't tell me. So I want to make sure I'm not a fan of people saying anything called them to do it. But I was feeling at that stage that this is something I was curious about. But there's levels to these things. I think I was talking to a client the other day. I could look back and there was probably three or four incidences where I thought, you know what, I'd like to facilitate this. And looking back now, wasn't ready, right? So sometimes you don't realize there's levels above you until you, maybe not levels above you isn't the right word, but there's levels to this. So I did the training with 5-MeO for quite some time, and that's why I'm an advocate of heavy training specifically with that medicine, mostly in the case because people are going to be offline. And I find that being able to care for folks in that capacity is a little bit different than being able to interact with them if they're in a psilocybin journey. They both have things that you need to take into consideration, but it's different. It's a different animal, so to speak, for me. So I've been at this work for some time. I've served thousands of people 5-MeO-DMT, same as ayahuasca, and I'm just at a stage now, again, as we continue to branch out, that I just can't do this. I don't have the capacity for it, nor do I want to have the capacity for it. And I think that's rare in the facilitating community, and that's why I think what we're offering is pretty special. Most facilitators view it as this is the job, and they don't want to train out of the job or train out of the specialness. They get a garner a lot of attention. There's a lot that comes with that position that I have no interest in. And again, I will thank 5-MeO-DMT for that. Egoic awareness is one of the key ingredients that I think that are one of the key takeaways. But to me, it's training more folks. We need this. This medicine is everywhere. We need more trained, qualified facilitators out, as far as I'm concerned, on a multitude of medicines. What brought to my attention the importance of it is probably the same as you. You could probably relate. Any of the facilitators that you've had conversations with relate. One time I can serve somebody 5-MeO-DMT or ayahuasca or psilocybin, and immediately, how do I do that? Is always the question. How do I do that? And I try to say this completely with compassion and humbly. It's like you don't, right? You should understand this, create a relationship with this, and get some training for this, right? But I've also realized that we're in a culture that that's not going to slow people down. They could hop on Amazon Market or Facebook Marketplace, order a bottle of medicine, get some toad venom, and get some psilocybin, buy their little cool outfit, and start running ceremonies. And I'm seeing more and more of that. And you've probably heard more and more people doing that. But what I'm seeing is what folks don't see in the back end of that. And as an integrator, you can understand this. A good portion of the folks that I'm now trying to help integrate are people that have had traumatic experiences in these spaces with unqualified, untrained facilitators. They think it is just sitting in the space and babysitting somebody. But there's so many components to it that, again, I don't think that they understand even the language around being trauma-informed, how the dress can impact the ceremony, all of these things, or of the evaluations, what medications are folks on, contraindications. There's just a lot that I put into going into a ceremony with somebody. And I guess I hit a stage at one point where these folks are going to do it, so let's train them. And that's what really put me on the path of trying to create some training protocols that my goal with it would be to make it. And that's why I appreciate these opportunities. How do you make it where it's a standard? Where if somebody's going to step into a space with somebody, can you have got the information out enough where they would ask, do you have any qualifications? Well, I took mushrooms a couple times. That's not enough. That's not enough. And even on that little simple note of experience, because that's one of the six components, right? Is understanding this medicine, having a relationship with this medicine. I mean, I didn't step into the space till 60 experiences. It's not that you have to do 60 experiences, but the knowledge behind that is that takes time to have those experiences, and the amount of evolution and personal growth that happens through the course of that time is a necessity to step into these spaces, just in my opinion. So the goal to me is we don't need more guides, is the line I say. We need more better trained, trauma-informed guides. And that's the goal with this course, is can we make this again a national program, or get it out there where more and more folks have the proper training to be with folks.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about more of some of those details, but something I just wanted to add in there that I think some people are kind of mistakenly assuming is people are thinking, well, I went to a psilocybin-assisted therapy program, or I went to a ketamine therapy program, so I'm now a psychedelic therapist, and I want to start working with 5-MeO. And these are places where the models of the psilocybin session, as you're saying, the model of the ketamine session, the model of ayahuasca, they don't apply to 5-MeO DMT. That you cannot go to one of these other programs that are not focusing on 5-MeO DMT and think that you are actually getting trained to be qualified to be working with this molecule, because, as you say, it's a completely different beast, and it's going to be really misleading for people to say, well, I've got my certificate, right? I've studied the MAPS protocol for how to administer MDMA, so I can serve 5-MeO. No, you can't actually. It's so profoundly different. And as you say, with a lot of these other medicines, you still have the opportunity to interact with the client, with the individual who is going through their experience. But as you say, with 5-MeO DMT, we're dealing with periods where people are quote unquote offline. The ego is not there to interact with, yet the animal is still having an experience. There's still something going on physiologically and consciously with these individuals. And, as you say, with people that are coming with integration calls, often it is people who were facilitated poorly. And sometimes it's not even a matter, in my experience, of people being facilitated poorly, but that they're facilitated by somebody who doesn't have enough experience, so that someone says, well, I had this experience, and my facilitator said, whoa, I don't know what that was, and start, proposing interpretations or something like that. And they come to me and they tell me, like, is this like weird? I was like, no, this is totally normal. This just means that your facilitator doesn't have anywhere near enough experience to know that your experience was totally normal, but now you feel problematized because they said, oh, I've never seen this before. This is really weird, So it's just the education, experience, 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 and more education.
Yeah, I mean, there's some overlaps again in trauma-informed language, versus saying you're being dramatic. It's like, well, again, I want to validate your feelings and experience. There's ways of communicating with people, but again, when I see some of the novice facilitators, and again, not to pick on them, it's you almost have this guru complex, right? It's because especially with 5-MeO, when folks come out of that space, they were going to look at almost anybody in that space with this immense amount of compassion and love. It's a love. And to me, the facilitator, and I've seen this, that wants to sit right in front of that person, right, and kind of take that and you're welcome, right? Like they did something besides keep them safe. To me, that's dangerous, and that's somebody that I want to not necessarily have in the space, that I'd like to train differently. And again, most of the training is who are you? What's, egoic awareness, unity, liberty. It's like, How do you transcend the need for that? How are you dressing and why? Is it to be provocative? Is it to be attractive? Is it to be seen in some special way?
Yeah.
Why, right? It's all the questions of why. So there are some overlap, but to your point of the 5MEO, this, to me, when I was training, the training protocol was I had to be a witness to over 200 facilitations, right? It was purely for the physical safety of the participant. Again, as we use that term offline, when they're offline, there's a lot of things that can happen poorly. And I actually got I don't get tossed out of many groups, but I did get tossed out of an online chat forum that was talking about 5MEO. And I asked one of the facilitators if they were had Red Cross training in first aid and CPR. And they were like, why would I need that? And I obviously fired back with like, that is the basics, right? Like if you just, and this is just my opinion, anybody that works in the space with me is trained in first aid and CPR. Hopefully that's not needed, but that's a basis for keeping people safe, right? Especially in 5MEO, if they're swallowing things, there's a lot that could happen. That is a basic. I think you should have some of this first aid training. They thought that was too aggressive. You're scaring people away from the ceremony, because I said, I would never, and I've done the medicine a couple hundred times, I would never sit in the space with somebody that couldn't keep me physically safe. And so there's other attributes to that. I also remember early on, one of the young ladies that was gonna serve me, I'm like, you're 5'2", 105 pounds. I'm 6'6 and a half, 245. How are you gonna keep me safe if I'm trying to leave the space when I'm offline, or if I'm kicking and flailing? Because then I'm sure you could relate. I've had folks that are 135 pounds and it's taken two or three of us to keep them contained and keep them safe, right? So there's a lot that goes into it that some folks just don't understand, because again, they're not having a conversation necessarily. There's no way for this verbal interaction to happen at some aspects of it. You just need to be able to physically keep people safe. And the only way to do that, and again, based on our original training, was to see enough of those where that no longer catches you off guard. Because like you said, the last integration I did was a young lady that did the ceremony. I think her facilitator was somebody that just normally facilitated smaller doses. Mm-hmm. And she went completely offline. And when she came back on, all she remembers is looking at him, and he had just had this fear on his face.
Yeah.
Imagine going through this massive, you know, this massive experience. You're one with everything, pure consciousness, and you come back and your shaman or facilitator is looking at you with terror in their eyes, right? It's not good. But if he had seen enough of these experiences, he would understand the importance of, look, we're the calm in the storm. Like, yeah. if I'm not calm, how is anybody else going to be calm? And I even think in the guidebook that I think that you're a co-author in, you may not even remember it, but they were talking about, again, Ram Dass and Timothy Leary. That was a huge, massive undertone of most of the negative experiences that they saw in the space were from people being involved with a facilitator that was not confident or did not feel safe or did not have that air of, I've got this under control. And that could lead to some really negative consequences. But you get that confidence through experience.
Yeah, and it's really important to have the genuine confidence, as you say, that is built on experience, not the artificial confidence of, I'm the shaman, I know what I'm doing, you know, but actually having been able to go through all of these different kinds of events with people, know what is normal, know how to greet it, know how to react to it, know how not to contribute to any problem that is arising or misperception that is arising, how not to inject projections and interpretations on the people. Like one of the things that just horrifies me is when somebody says, yeah, and then my facilitator said that my experience was so weird that I must be possessed. It's like, oh, that really fucks people up. Like don't fucking tell people shit like that, you know? And it comes from a lack of experience that, no, this is the way that some people act out when their ego is out of the way, that they've got some shit that they've got to release. And yeah, it looks like an exorcism. It looks like a demon, but don't start telling people that they're demon possessed, because that's really going to fuck with people. And that just shows your inexperience and your reliance upon some kind of spiritual dogma that you don't really have enough information on.
Yes. That to me, and again, it's, I really try not to be triggered by that. And again, that's part of this path is trying to work to be less triggered, but it is still the most triggering thing for me. And I pick on the spiritual community a little bit because, you know, what I'm finding is, well, I'm a yoga teacher or I'm a therapist or, you know, I do Reiki and I've got sound healing. So I hold space for people, right? So I can easily do this job, right? Because they get some level of attention. And I get it. We've created a culture of, you know, everybody needs to be extraordinary, right? Versus just extraordinary, right? So everybody wants to be extraordinary versus extraordinary. It's like they need to be seen. So there's this constant competition. So I'm seeing more and more of this, like I'm channeling this and, you know, I'm this guru of that. And so they see this as a way of instantly being able to step in front of people and get this specialness, this recognition. And I just find that extremely troubling for all the reasons you just say. They're pushing a spiritual dogma. And I could even throw myself in that camp early on. Again, I thought I understood everything about oneness and unity because I had these experiences and I wanted to share that, right? That's inexperience. That's inexperience. And so I could look back and again, see there's levels to the levels. And now it's your experience for you to interpret the way you want to interpret. But for me to tell you, oh yeah, yeah, it's because you were reincarnated and you know, you were Isis in your past life and it's channeling through, it's like you're creating. Yeah, I really struggle with that. I really struggle with that.
Yeah. Well, what it comes down to really is that we need facilitators who are authentic human beings. And I think that at just this conversation that we've been having right now is a good indication that you are one of those people that you're speaking about. These are your experiences. This is where you feel your limitations. This is where you're looking to grow. And I'm going to invite you to talk more about the course in a minute, but I just wanted to share that, you know, the other weekend I was up in Portland for the Sanctum Psychedelic Conference. And there was one speaker up on stage and I don't want to mention her specifically, but she had an interesting talk because she apparently had a very large like online following. And she was talking about the disconnect between the social persona, the role that she played in social media, versus what was actually happening in her personal life. So it was, you know, on the screen, it's like, here's someone who's got all their shit together. I want to do ceremony with this person, blah, 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 blah. But then behind the scenes, she's like falling apart and crumbling. And I think that that's where what we need is the authentic individuals who are bringing their authentic self to their social media presence, not putting on a performance, not dressing up in fancy clothes, not using the filters or whatever, you know, so that they're authentic and real. So that then when people come to them and say, hey, I want to do ceremony with you, they're getting the same person. They're not getting the performer. They're getting the human being. So in a sense, it's kind of like we need classes to help people be authentic human beings in this space. Not performers, not shamans, not ritualists. You know, there's roles for that, but it muddies the waters a lot. Versus, I think here in this conversation, people are going to be able to say, hey, I think I've got a read on who this Stephen Kirby guy is. I've heard what he has to say. I hear how he thinks. So when they come and they work with you, they're going to get the same deal that you're presenting right here on the podcast. You're not performing for me. You're not performing for us. And I think that that's what we need more of. And I think that that's probably what you're looking to help cultivate within your classes. I just put words in your mouth, but you can confirm or deny that.
Again, you've always been more articulate than me, but, and I appreciate you saying that and not to try to provide evidence for that, but I will nonetheless. It's like I'd been facilitating for years when I reached out to you.
Yeah.
And said, I think I'm doing this right. Here's what we're doing. Here's kind of my training protocol. Here's how we're doing this. Tell me I'm wrong. Like, where are the errors here? How could I do better? And there's significantly, there's several other groups for the same thing. I'm like, I'd sign up for your training. Well, why would you sign up for a training? Maybe you know something that I don't. And if you're authentic and you're really trying to put the participant first, you're always going to want to train. Like, the trainings never stop for me. And again, that's why we've had a good relationship. Like, if you know something I know, tell me. Because it's not about me. It's about making sure that we are doing the best we can for these participants, for these people's safety. It's a huge experience, regardless of the entheogen, but it's a huge experience that I think people that are just stepping into the space take it a little bit more lightly than they should. And it's mostly because they've had an experience and they're like, oh, this I could help. And I believe that it comes from a place of compassion. But also from the work I've done and seen, it also comes from a place of ego. And the class that we've created is, and most people may not want to sign up because of this, but at least 40 to 50% of the class is talking about who you are. Like the reflection questions, again, why do you even want to do this? And that seems like a silly question, but it's probably the most profound question you could ask anybody that wants to facilitate why. And don't tell me because you want to help people. Don't take that one off the board. And please don't tell me that the spirit called you or something outside of yourself has called you and tapped you on the shoulder and given you special permission to do this. That never happened to me, right? It just, I'm like, this is something I'm interested in. So people are always shocked when I say that, like, how were you called? Who called me? Who called me? And if you think people are calling you, you should definitely join my class so you can work through some of these things and find out that that line of thinking is exactly what we're trying to eliminate in this arena.
Yeah, I think that's such an important one because it gets thrown around so often. Again, at the Sanctum Psychedelic Conference, there was someone up on stage. I'm not going to mention him by name, but he was talking about how he wasn't comfortable calling himself a medicine man until he had a quote-unquote past life experience that he was a medicine man in a past life. Therefore, that gave him the authority to call himself a medicine man in practice now. And, you know, my response to that is like, if you fucking want to call yourself a medicine man, like, step up and be it and take ownership of it. But this whole displacement of authority that, you know, something beyond me, whether it's a past life or an angel or a spirit or God or whatever, said, this is what you're supposed to do. You know, my question is always like, well, according to whom? And if it's not like, look, this is me, then why are you really doing it? That you're displacing and you're really undermining your own sovereignty as a human being to say that, well, it's my past life that authorizes me to do this. Like, well, and I, whenever people talk about past lives, I always just say, like, just don't take it personally. Like, please don't take it personally if you've had a past life experience, because, you know, there's really only one here. So we all can claim whatever past life we want, honestly. So what's the point?
Yeah, but to your point, if that's what you want to call yourself, that's then just step up and do that.
Yeah.
And that used to be very triggering for me, the word shaman, people calling themselves that, and healer, and again, it's fine. We're trying to come up with some way to describe what we do, right? Folks ask all the time, what are you? I'm like, I'm just Kirby, right? Yeah. And I'm spending time trying to eliminate these roles, and it's just semantic baggage. So you walk into a space and it's like, do you see all these things I want you to see me as? Or do you see them all? Because I'm wearing them pretty thick.
Yeah.
I think I should be able to show up to a ceremony and cut off jeans and a Budweiser t-shirt, so to speak, and do what I do, and folks will know what I am, whatever that is. And that encompasses lots of different roles, right? So, but they're just roles, and the attachment to this need of these titles is tricky. But that's why I think 5-MeO, and again, just specifically that molecule, is the facilitator's medicine. I love serving facilitators as medicine with the warning, hold on to all that nonsense lightly, because it could shift quickly.
Yeah.
The divine, all of that, right? Priest, all those titles, fantastic. I know you're trying to come up with a way to describe yourself. That's great. But in about 5 minutes, you're going to realize those are roles that, and titles that you created to show yourself in a special way. And that's okay. I did too, right? That's all of this. That's part of the experience of, like, I could have compassion and empathy for all of that. That was all part of my early path. I'm like, okay, do I have the right look? Do they believe that I'm this thing? And then it's like, are you this thing? Like, what is that thing even it is? It's like, you're just nothing. Just be empty. So I call it like energetically neutral. Just be Kirby.
Yeah.
Everything else is just, you know, decoration for other people. And do you need it? And if you do, you probably shouldn't be facilitating. So it is the work of the facilitation training is that why, and how do we do this without bringing all of our unnecessary stuff into the space and putting that and dumping that on the participants like it's about us.
Yeah. Just meeting as authentic human beings. So we've talked around a little bit. So let's go ahead and let's be specific. What is the course that you have coming up? How is it going to work? Who is going to be wanting to sign up for this? Let's get into the details.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's called Certified Trauma-Informed Entheogenic Guide. And again, I want a certification course, right? Because I want folks to, first off, we love certifications, right? That provides some title and some specialness too, which I struggled with, but it also gives you some level of distinction, like a doctor or anything else that, look, I put in the work for this, I put in the time for this. And once I created this title, to me, it's like, well, this needs to be of the highest order. I don't want this just tossed around. I want something that folks have earned. And then I collaborated this with my old shaman, started 2 years ago. Then she got pregnant and kind of stepped out of the process, but invited my wife to step in, who was actually the perfect fit. And my wife's a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's been doing psychedelic assisted therapy for a decade. She's the first ketamine assisted therapist in the state of Iowa, so because that's what we can use here legally. So I always jokingly say she's on one side of the tracks. I'm teetering. Another side of the tracks, but we've been able to collaborate on so much, and I've learned so much from her. So I'm going to have her lead a good portion of the trauma-informed aspect of it and make this a certification course that's even applicable to therapists. Because as you mentioned, a lot of therapists are stepping into this. Working with people in heavily altered states is not the same as just a traditional therapeutic session, right? There's a lot of nuances and difference here. And it's also designed for just compassionate individuals. Again, those folks who have had maybe an experience or had some experiences and like, I'm interested in this. Well, part of the training is to encourage people to have at least 15 of their own personal journeys, right? So know that stepping into it. I can't force folks to take journeys. I can't hold you accountable for that. But to me, understanding whatever sacrament is you want to serve, you got to create a relationship with it. I've done 5-MeO on just about every dose a zillion times so I can understand or have a general idea of where folks are going to be. Same as psilocybin, psilomethoxin, all of these. You create a relationship through experience. And it starts to me with your own experience. And that's why I'm always a little concerned of folks that have one or two experiences and now they're preaching about it as if they have a relationship with it. It's not true. But anyway, so it's a certification course. It's going to be 5 weeks. It starts September 10th. We're doing it from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. We're recording these. So again, if you can't attend the live session, within 48 hours, you'll have access to the material. It's comprehensive. You have access to the guide manual, which I don't have in front of me, but it's 60 pages of just meat. There's no fluff in it. I've eliminated all the nonsense, but there's a lot in it. So you get access to that immediately. I've also created a forms cabinet, so medical waivers, evaluation forms, medical evaluation forms, right? The thought of somebody just stepping into the space without understanding their personal background, their medical background, their mental health background, their entheogenic experience background just horrifies me. And maybe I'm just old, and liability still concerns me, right? But I think understanding all this is important. So I'm offering them the entire forms package. So again, anything from the first contact with a potential participant to the integration process, we're going to go through the course. So again, it's going to be over 5 weeks. The thought of giving it a week in between is so you have some time to sit with the material. Again, a lot of it is based on these reflection questions. Why? What can you learn? What have you learned? How do you apply that in your personal life? How do we evolve as human beings? So we spread it out over the 5 weeks. And again, so some of the components that they need to is they need to get certified in first aid and CPR, but we give them a discount code to make that happen. You have to, and again, I can't force them, but we say you're encouraged to have 15, at least 15 of your own personal journeys. So you could again understand whatever sacrament that you're interested in, and then I offer them some one-on-one time. So if they have specific questions or specific practices, any type of individual guidance that I could provide them, I'm going to provide them. And the part that I'm excited about trying to add in addition to that is these master classes, right? So again, when we're talking about the guide work, it's broad and it's encompassing all of the common psychedelics. But I also want to give folks a very deep dive into the actual practical applications of each of these medicines. So I'm working with other facilitator friends that are well known in the community to help create these master classes of psilocybin, for example, is one that I'm passionate about people understanding more and more about, especially therapists, because they could step into that with a little less legal liability. So that's the overall encompassing concept of the class. So I'm excited and blessed to be able to have my wife, who's so qualified, to be in the space with me, and we get along great. So it's been exciting to work on her with this project.
So if I could just recap some of this. So it sounds like this first class here, this 5 weeks course, is kind of more of a general course. As you say, it's about trauma-informed psychedelic or entheogenic facilitation. So it's kind of looking at it more generally in terms of what do you need to be qualified just for basic medicine serving. And then you're developing the other courses for more in-depth about specific medicine. So this one is not about any particular medicine. Again, it's more this trauma-informed. Maybe you could explain a little bit more of what is meant by trauma-informed. And like I was reading an article yesterday that was talking about the rise of trauma speak in American culture. And it was kind of problematizing it, saying that fucking everybody's got trauma now. Everybody's using trauma and using trauma speak, and that it's kind of watered it down a bit, that it was mainly originally meant as a specific kind of psychological diagnosis and also potential treatment pathways. It's kind of like with people talking about PTSD, like now everybody has PTSD, but you know, someone's PTSD from not getting served breakfast at the right time is different from somebody's PTSD who had to watch people get blown up in the theater of war, you know? So, I'm just curious how you would go about defining that. And also, why is it important when we're dealing in the psychedelic space of understanding various forms of trauma and then how it may present within clients and how to deal with it?
Yeah, I think everything you said is, I'm in complete agreement. I think it's been watered down. I really hesitated on using the term. I sat with that for some time. Why it's important is because the majority of folks that, at least that I was interacting with, that were coming to ceremony, coming to the space, did have some legit level of trauma. And the whole concept behind it is, how do we go through this without creating additional trauma? Or how do we understand our own trauma and our own trauma imprints, and how to not put that on those folks? And that's some of the things that we've talked about. How do you show up? What? Why? What is that? And then trauma-informed language became very important to me. And I'll give a shout out to Atira Tan. I am certified. She created a certified plant medicine facilitation course. To me, it's very deep dive into the trauma aspect of it. And to some of the points that you said, I'm like, everybody has, it seems to be just a new cool buzzword. And, you know, I saw somebody trauma-informed yoga. I'm like, what are we doing? Trauma-informed sound baths, trauma-informed, everything's trauma-informed now. So I would completely acknowledge that. And it did make me hesitate on the title, but my experience, the language, just trauma-informed language. But again, you could probably come up with another word than trauma-informed language, but how are we communicating with people? Things that I don't like for folks to say in the space is like, I'm proud of you, right? But just something small like that. Like, I'm proud of you. You hear that a lot and look on social media. Somebody says, I'm proud of you. And that sounds like a parent talking to a child. There's connotations associated with that. Words even like surrender, right? You could say, well, a lot of folks that were victimized, that's what the perpetrator, that type of terminology. So just understanding, again, a participant's background, understanding any potential real trauma that they've gone through and how you can navigate that properly with your words, with your dress, with the dogma you may bring into it, is an important aspect of this work. Again, if you're just facilitating experiences for people like, yeah, I want to go see the machine, cool, but knock yourselves out. That's a whole different area. But what I'm talking about are folks, and the majority of folks, again, that we are seeing are bringing in some level of legitimate trauma. And those are the folks that we are working with specifically. So to have some language behind that, understand the theories behind vagal nerve, the autonomic nervous system, how it operates, right? I think these principles are important. And we give a pretty good overview of it. We dive a little bit deep on it, but we also give you some more material to continue to dive deep if you want. and make it enough for a therapist to get something out of it and the layman. But it is a tricky term, for sure.
Yeah. So these courses, you say it's going to be 5 weeks. It's one class per week, and it sounds like participants will be having a little bit of homework and some reading to do. Maybe unpack that a little bit more so people can kind of get an idea of. So if they want to sign up for this, and we should talk about how do they sign up for it. If they want to sign up for it, what are they going to be committing themselves to over the course of that 5 weeks, and then the certificate that they'll get at the end.
Yeah, I think if you're coming to the class thinking, okay, it's 5 weeks, 3 hours a week for 15 hours, and then I'm a certified guide, I'd say really question that, right? Like I said early on, I had 60 experiences, and it's not the number count, it's the time, it's the commitment to understanding these the sacrament or intention that you're interested in. So, yep, you can go through the 5 weeks. Do your 3 hours a night, do the reflection questions, and get through all this and get your certification once you're certified in first aid and CPR and acknowledge that you've had a certain levels of journey. But if that's what you're interested in, I don't know if the course is for you. The whole point is continued learning. So we created a reading list. Your books are on it. A video list, right? Here's more information. I don't want to spend, 5 days talking about vagal nerve. I want to touch on it. I want you to give the, I want to give you some really good understanding of it, really good information on it. But here's a resource who's an expert in that that you can go back to and get even a deeper dive. And same thing with each of these individual sacraments. Like we will talk about in the course, the common ones, psilocybin, psilocybin, DMT, and some of these others. We will talk about a dosing protocol, how that ceremony should look. But still, you need to know more about that, right? So here's some material for you to take a deeper dive. So to me, if you have no interest in continuing education, you probably shouldn't step into this because I'm still educating myself on it. I'm still trying to grow and learn. So the commitment that is the mandatory commitment, so to speak, is the 3 hours times 5 weeks and then the CPR. The classes are recorded, like I said, so you have continued access to them. You'll have the guide manual, which you will have complete access to, which again has just about everything you need for the class or from the class in it in written format that you could refer back to at any stage. Yeah.
So for people who are listening and they say, "Hey, yeah, I want to do this." How do they do it?
That's a great question. I'm trying to think what's the best way for them to access my material. I don't know if folks are able to follow me, but I think from an email standpoint, if folks just wanted to send a simple email out to me at theunchurch@protonmail.com, that's a good way. If you have the capacity, once we're finished, I can give you a link to the actual course itself, and maybe that'd be an easier way for folks to follow along with it or reach out and get more information on it. We've got a registration page, and then obviously, if you want to take that the next step, we've got the payment form. I'd also say, and this sounds very markety, but I'm going to say it anyway, we do offer a money-back guarantee. To me, I understand money is money. It's important, and we've got limited resources. And when you're considering embarking on anything like this that is going to be a financial investment, I stand behind what we've created. I fully stand behind it. So to put my money where my mouth is, so to speak, I've offered a 14-day money-back guarantee. So that means you can go through 2 weeks of the class, essentially, find out if it's a good fit for you, find out if it's something that's going to be a benefit to you. And if not, I'll gladly send you your money back. For this week, we are offering just essentially we have an early bird discount going on that's cut the cost down by about 30%. So again, if folks are interested in registering, I'd say consider doing it sooner rather than later because I think that early bird's going to end in like 5 days. But if possible, I will give you a link after the show and you could put it in and folks can click on that and make this easy.
Yeah, and just to be specific, that this will be coming out on August 14th, so it might be a little bit too late for the early bird discount on that. But the class you said starts September 10th, is that correct?
September 10th, and yeah, we'll find a way that I'll still honor that early bird with folks. So we'll figure something out along that lines. But yeah, the class starts September 10th. But as soon as you register, as soon as you sign up, you get access to all the material that's out there already, which is the actual guide manual, the reading list, the video list. So you have access immediate to all this what I would consider very high level phenomenal material. And again, as each class is done online and Zoom, we'll take those recordings and then put them into a separate file so you'll have access to the actual live class as well.
Yeah. And it sounds like this would be a good access point for people who might want to consider then taking the more advanced master classes.
Yeah. I still participate in these master classes. Again, I reach out to folks that I know that are co-facilitators or facilitators. I think creating a community around this is important too. And I should have mentioned that that's an aspect that we're going to offer as well. Is as folks sign up, we're going to have a community page where other folks that have gone through it, other certified entheogenic guides will have access to each other. Because probably one of the greatest things, or things that I'm very lucky to have, is this network of facilitators, right? Not just 5-MeO, but Wachuma, all these different entheogens. So you have access to really good information and really good people that you could also lean on and have conversations with, because not everybody understands what it takes to do what you're doing. And it's nice to have folks that could relate and have additional information for you. So we're going to create a community around it as well.
Yeah. Well, I really think it's great that you're stepping up and doing this. And I know that you're doing it because you want to, that you are looking to cultivate more of this for yourself. And I think it's great. And, you know, we live in such an interesting transitional time that, again, there are a few places you can go to get legally certified to do psilocybin therapy. Like here in Oregon, you can sign up for these multi-thousand dollar classes, and then you can become certified as a psilocybin assisted therapist. But you know, that's just Oregon, and we're dealing with not only the rest of the country, but the rest of the world, that people are serving medicines, whether they are certified and trained or not. And that if we all just want to wait around for the universities and the research centers to put together their training programs, that's too late. That in a sense, this is a way of addressing the question of harm reduction, or as a good friend of mine, he says he doesn't like the term harm reduction. He likes the term benefit maximization because it's more positive. But this is the way of creating benefit maximization to fill a need outside of quote-unquote official channels. But it does take informed, educated, experienced individuals just going ahead and putting it together. And so, no, it's not the equivalent of a university degree. It's not the equivalent of going through some medical training program. But it's a place to start, and it's what's needed, and that to have people step up and fill those roles and provide that community, provide feedback, provide education and access to information. It's necessary, and that is going to maximize benefits for everyone.
Yeah, and just briefly, I think you nailed it. I think my wife, again, when she went to her psychedelic-assisted therapy, it was like $10,000. So most of the courses I see out there are multiple thousands of dollars. And part of this concept behind with this is to make it accessible to people. So again, when I bring up things like the early bird discount and the money back guarantee, that isn't marketing. It's because I want people to sign up for this course. I want more and more people to sign up for the course because this is good information. And I want to make it financially accessible to people. So even on the registration page, if you go there and you find that it's financially out of reach, we have an option to reach out to me. I've already made several deals, so to speak, or offered scholarships to several other people because I want a diverse network of folks from all over the country. So don't let resources stop you. I've kind of brought that same concept that we bring into the facilitation space, right? If it's medicine, then why am I charging so much for it necessarily? It's like I want to be able to give it to anybody that's in need, and I don't see this any differently. So yes, we could make a couple dollars doing this, but that is not the basis for it. The basis is to get this training out to folks and to make it accessible to more people.
Yeah.
So it's priced accordingly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And yeah, I'll just share that you and I are in conversation about developing and cultivating that 5-MeO DMT master course. And we've had some communications around that. I'm definitely very interested in what it is that we're building. And it's still in the developmental stage, but I'm looking forward to that. That, as you know, I'm big on education. I'm big on sharing, and appreciate that you've considered bringing me in to help develop that master class. And we'll have more to share about that as we know more about it. But do encourage people to kind of start here, that this sounds like a great entry point for people. And again, also for people who already have been facilitating and serving, that, you know, maybe get some new perspectives, get some new information Or even brush up on what you felt you've learned before, that there's nothing wrong with continuing education within this area.
Yeah, and it may bring up areas again as I'm going back through my own material. I'm again finding ideas and finding concepts that I'm like, that's right, you should reintegrate that. You should remember that, utilize that. But to your point of the 5-MeO training, absolutely excited about that. It's, again, it is a different molecule. It is different, and maybe I'm projecting a little bit because my experiences are always so profound, and you know, there's a lot there that I remember the very first time I came out of the medicine, the very first time I literally said it out loud. I'm like, be careful who you do this with.
Yeah.
I don't know why I saw my shaman in my eyes, and I'm like, be careful who you do this with. It's just that profound. And I've been in that universe for some time now. And again, I've seen the good, the bad, the ugly. And that's the tricky part of social media, right? Is sometimes the ugly is louder than the good.
Yeah.
So that message is being shared more than some of the more folks that are, again, just humble and quiet and not trying to be seen. But unfortunately, the people that are being seen, not always, but in a lot of cases, are the ones that are doing things that I think they should reconsider, right? They should reconsider. So almost every time I serve this medicine in a group, folks are interested in how they can do this, and I've just never had a good answer for them. It's always like, at some stage, we'll figure something out. So to collaborate with you and bring both of our experiences to the table, I don't know if you can come up with a better training program that that's really going to provide folks everything they need, along with a in-person, you know, we're working on some details, but I for sure see folks in the space, working with the medicines, working with each other. I think you have to see these experiences live. You have to see them. You have to be there. And so that experiential, I'm excited for folks. But it's going to be a life-changing experience for folks that step into that.
Yeah. Well, Kirby, it's been great having you back on the podcast. I think we've covered the bases of what we need to get this information out there. And I appreciate the collaborations that we've done already, and look forward to more on what we're developing here. And it's also just been a pleasure to have you back on the podcast. And for the people who I've already interviewed, who I've bumped you till later so that I could get Kirby on, we have a little time sensitive issue here, but you know, I do like to be able to do what I can to help people out who are doing work that I feel that I can support. And you're definitely one of those individuals. And that's why I'm happy to have you back on, and happy to have you bump a couple other people to a little bit later for release on the podcast so that we can get this out and get people participating in your course.
Right. I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate you having me. And again, I appreciate the relationship. So it's been a pleasure.